Okay, the Economic Development and Housing Budget Division for Wednesday, February 25th will come to order. Today, committee members, what we're doing is we're going to be talking about an OSHA investigation. Currently, there's a lawsuit filed against the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry on behalf of two former OSHA investigators in the Department of Labor and Industry. And the former investigators have a claim that they were victims of retaliation and punishment for not following instructions from senior department staff. Due to the ongoing lawsuit, this committee is prevented from discussing aspects of retribution, exclusion, or punishment as a result of any actions taken by former investigators. I am, however, concerned after reading public court documents as to the policies and procedures within OSHA regarding investigations and citations. In the court records, there are numerous cases in which the investigators either felt pressured to or were directly told to change or remove sections of an investigative report. In some cases, investigators were allegedly told to close a report without completing their investigation. There's another instance in which an investigator was asked to close an investigation and fine an organization without waiting for a coroner's report. So I'm also concerned with the concept that Minnesota companies who are enrolled in the MnSTAR program are being protected from investigations into serious and catastrophic injuries at the workplace. And so we're going to have Patricia Todd, the director of OSHA, to come forward and let us know how these things proceed in OSHA and the rules of procedure in OSHA. And we have two other people who are on the agenda who would like to tell us of their experiences. So Ms. Todd, would you please come forward?
Mr. Chair and fellow committee members, I appreciate this opportunity to be able to come forward and discuss the program. As Senator Tomasoni did indicate,
Ms. Todd, can you pull your microphone a little closer to you, please? Thank you.
Is that better? As Senator Tomasoni did indicate, there is some ongoing litigation in regard to two specific individuals who will be speaking later. I don't believe it's been made clear that it has so far gone through a couple of courts, and in both cases, summary judgment has been granted on behalf of the department to indicate that the claims that are being brought forth do not have merit. In addition, the federal government monitors the effectiveness of the OSHA program and has done and continues to do evaluations on our overall effectiveness and how we follow policies and procedures, and we have passed every and all of those issues, as well as in some of the cases that are being specifically brought forth, we had complaints against the state program. They're called a CASPA, and in those specific cases, the federal government found that the Department of Labor and Industry at no time violated any procedures nor did anything wrong in regard to any of these specific cases. So I just want to make sure that that's clear to start out with. As you can tell, or I believe in your handout, I have a PowerPoint presentation that provides some general information about OSHA. And I could go through that to give you an overview of what the OSHA program is and to provide a little bit of background of what we do within that specific area. Overall, as it indicates in there, Minnesota OSHA has been around since 1973. We are an approved state plan state. There are 26.
Ms. Todd, why don't we focus on investigative policies of the agency of OSHA, and then maybe you can comment on. I don't know if all of this PowerPoint is necessary, but if you could just at least focus on the investigative procedures, and then what OSHA's policy is toward changing reports also.
All right.
Okay.
I believe that in your handout you have a slide that's called slide 14. It talks about the inspection process, and it talks about what we do on, and it's not on page 14. We did 6 slides on one page, so it should be on the third page of your handout. We have an inspection process that we go through that determines how and when we do investigations, also in regard to when and how we do and modify different changes to specific files. These processes, as I will indicate to you, there has only been one change since probably the last 10 years, that these have been the consistent processes that have been utilized within the state of Minnesota's OSHA program.
There's only been one change to a file. There's only been one change to your process.
One change to the process,
okay,
is what I indicate. For the inspection process, we investigate to determine whether or not there was a hazard that violated an OSHA standard. And we are, there are clearly OSHA standards that we have to verify to ensure whether or not there was a violation. In addition to determining whether or not there is or is not a violation to an OSHA standard, we also need to ensure that there has been exposure to specific employees. We also need to ensure that that there's been exposure and that and the length of exposure that has specifically occurred to the employee during the process. So we have to make sure that any hazard that is identified clearly is a known hazard, as well as that employees have been exposed to that specific hazard. There are things within the process, and it indicates in there, there are certain individuals that we can or cannot issue citations against. There are individuals, especially on a multi-employer work site, and I believe one of the directives that are also our ADMs, that's also in one of your packets, does indicate some information regarding multiple employers' work sites. And it does specifically talk about the fact that there are different types of employers on a work site that has multiple employers. A good example would be a construction site or even a paper mill, where you would have a contractor who's come in to sole job is to repair or do something with a boiler. And if their job is to come in and do something specifically with the boiler, they were hired to do something specifically for that boiler. If the employer who hired them to come in did not define what the criteria was and how they perform, did not expose any of their employees to that specific hazard, they are not either a creating, exposing, or controlling employer. So therefore, in some cases, they would not be issued citations. Also, I talk a little bit about how the process works in regard to how an investigation starts. But since, Senator, you want me mainly just to talk about the specific aspects of a process, I can tell you that the way we end
You can tell me how it starts.
Oh, I can tell you how it starts?
You can tell me how it starts.
All righty then. All right. I can discuss how exactly a process starts. The way that an inspection starts is we conduct an opening conference. We first of all, how we determine where to go for inspections varies depending on various different items. We look at industries that have high hazards, and we tend to focus our efforts in regard to those high-hazard industries. And, in fact, about 75 to 80% of all our inspections are conducted in high-hazard industries. And the other ones are normally on-programmed inspections or fatalities or imminent dangers or things along those lines. When we do an investigation, we conduct an opening conference, which is conducted with individuals in the company. If the company is represented by employees through a collective bargaining agreement, we request that a member of the collective bargaining group, one of their stewards or representatives, attend the opening conference. And at that time, we review additional records to be able to see what type of records they have in place, their OSHA logs, items like that, and to describe overall what our intent is of the investigation. Based on the type of investigation, it may determine the scope of the investigation. And by that, I mean, in a fatality, we will normally just, what we always do, we just focus on the fatality itself. If it's a serious injury, again, we typically focus just on that specific item. We also do some investigations that are complaint-based and otherwise based, where we focus on specific areas. But generally, we do an overall inspection. And within that process, after we do an opening conference, we go around and we do inspections, and we look through the actual work site to determine what type of hazards we end up seeing. And in that process, we end up interviewing employees. We have the authority to interview employees without the presence of the employer, and we make it a point that we do that, as well as during that walk-around inspection, which, again, includes the employer and the employee if they're represented. We go through and look through the worksite and identify specific hazards. During that time, we also take pictures of specific hazards to be able to provide and have the documentation needed in order to provide what is needed for a specific citation. In regard to, we also at that time also conduct a closing conference, and typically we conduct it at that same time. However, in some cases, depending on the complexity of the case, we will not conduct a closing conference at that time. Typically for fatalities, serious injuries, as well as others that have more complex or more citations, we can hold a closing conference up to a month after the initial investigation is complete, the initial investigation is started. And the reason for that delay is to allow for additional time for the investigator along with the people who are involved in the issuance of the citation to resolve and discuss the hazards that they have encountered. There are different types of citations, the different types of hazards that are available. And those types of citations include willful, repeat, failure to abate, serious, and non-serious. And with those different types of citations, we have different authority to be able to issue penalties based on the specific hazard that is identified. Within that, as we're going through to do and determine what we are having in regard to that, we provide information and we look at specific things within the process to determine what we do or do not need to do. And it, if you look at starting on page 20 or slide 27, about which would be page 4 or 5 on yours. It talks about the type of information that is typically required and put into an investigative report. The requirements of what is or is not in an investigative report, again, has been consistent and has been clearly defined in our manuals and in our procedures. And it identifies what specific information we need, the name of the establishment we interviewed, the type of investigation we conducted, and various different aspects of the investigative process. In addition, we do what is called a narrative. And a narrative is something where we provide some information about what happened. Normally, we'll provide information in a narrative that will say who was involved in the walk-around conference when we did the walk-around inspection, who was involved in the closing investigation, what was the summary of an overview of what the fatality was or serious injury or information related to that. Then we get into determining whether or not a violation has or has not occurred. In determining whether or not a violation has or has not occurred, we have to be able to identify a specific OSHA standard that has been violated in order for us to issue a citation. There is one exemption to that, which is a general duty citation, which I'll talk about a little later. But again, unless there is a clearly defined OSHA standard that says what they are doing in violation of it, we are not able to issue a citation. And when we do look at issuing a citation, we look into such things as how was the standard identified and how did the employer require to meet the requirements. In some cases, the employer will be attempting to adhere to the OSHA requirement but for some reason within the process they have been unable to do so, as well as, again, evidence of employee exposure. Again, if there is no evidence of employee exposure where an employee is exposed to that specific hazard, we don't have the authority to issue a citation relative to that, as well as whether or not the employer had knowledge or should have had knowledge of that specific violation to that standard. In regard to the general duty requirements, in order for us to issue a general duty citation, and a general duty citation is a citation that clearly is something that, as I already indicated, is not a defined hazard that is within the OSHA requirements for us to do. So again, when we issue a general duty citation, we have to have a higher level of proof. And the reason is that this is something that, as an employer, they are not able to go to a citation book to say, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and this is how I'm supposed to be doing it. And therefore, under general duty, again, we have a very high requirement to be able to ensure that those that we have the information to prove that. We need to be able to ensure that it is a serious hazard, that is something that is exposed to the employee, as well as the fact that it has to be a recognized hazard within the industry, and the employer needed to be aware of the recognized hazard and need to have been aware of options in which to abate or change that hazard. So again, I can't articulate strongly enough that the ability to issue and to do general duty citations is is clearly at a level that is different than some of the other items. In regard to a specific citation, when we issue a citation to an employer, we issue specific information to them. In our file, we have information that includes stuff regarding the specific other things specifically regarded to the investigation. However, when we do send out a citation to the employer to identify what specifically has or has not happened, we in there provide a brief description of what the rule or the violation is so that they clearly know what is or is not should be handled or done. We have what are called AVDs, and what an AVD is an alleged violation description. And what that does is to be able to ensure that if one senator and another senator went to two different places to be able to do an investigation, they would both use the same description on which to state what that violation is. So that way there is consistency on how we communicate from the agency on how a specific hazard is or is not identified, plus how a specific hazard is or is not communicated. In regard to penalty calculations and what we do specifically in regard to penalties, we clearly have some requirements that define what is or is not required for us to be able to calculate and determine the penalty amounts that are allowed. We take into account such things as good faith based on the safety programs that the employer has implemented. We take into account size of the employer based on if it's a small employer or large employer, as well as we take into account history of previous inspections that were conducted within that specific facility. We also use different areas to be able to determine further how to determine the amount to issue the penalty for. We have what is called a citation rating guide, and what that citation rating guide does is it looks at specific types of typical hazards or violations that we see. So if there is a violation of falling from 5 feet or falling for 20 feet, they would have a different rating depending on how likely an individual would be to be seriously injured, depending on the type of exposure and depending on the type of hazard that was violated. In addition, we also look at the duration of the hazard, the duration that they were exposed to it, the work conditions relative to that, as well as we do have penalty multipliers based upon other things that we do or do not see. Some have to do with whether or not it's a repeat, a willful, or whether or not there was a cause or contribute to overall within a fatality investigation. In regard to how the process works for the review process, as I indicated, the review process has been consistent throughout the process for at least the last 10 years, if not longer. The review process has been and will continue to be as it's defined on slide 38 for the general, as well as slide 41 for the more specific And that would be slide 6, or page 6, or maybe page 7. And in regard to that, the way that the standard review process works is the investigator goes out and conducts the investigation. And the investigator comes back, again, looking at slide 38, which is not a fatality investigation. The investigator goes out, does an investigation, looks at the specific hazards that are available, and brings forth a recommendation as to what should or should not be cited. Those, as is indicated in this chart, further go on to review. Each and every file within the OSHA program is reviewed. Each and every program and reason for why we track why and what is happening in regard to the review process. But the review process looks for consistency as well as it looks for compliance. We have various different manuals. As I can tell, you were provided some information in regard to administrative ADMs. But we also have directives, which also provides directives on what should or should not do. We had a field compliance manual that is over 130 or 140 pages, which also includes additional information on how and what should be done in regard to a specific investigation. And all of those different requirements need to be evaluated and reviewed. And I appreciate the fact that you have a portion of those requirements here, but I want to make it sure that it is clear to the individuals here that if you look at the overall requirements of what we do and what we review when, or the training that we provide to our investigators, include if you looked at a piece of paper or a stack of paper, it is probably 4 inches long of the paper and identification of the procedures and requirements that we define in what and how we should cite citations.
Okay, well, Ms. Todd, why would you change? Why would an investigator's report be changed?
Because an investigative report that gets changed at numerous times due to a specific process, and it gets changed because in some cases the investigator may not have seen a hazard that they should have, and they have taken a picture of it, and a person who has higher level of experience who has reviewed that may identify that specific hazard, and the person may need to go back and modify that. In some cases, they may identify that the hazard had a higher exposure rate or was of a greater magnitude than was actually defined in the requirements that we have. As well as in certain cases, we do have requirements to be able to ensure the confidentiality of the individuals that we are there to be able to do the investigation investigation involving. So in some cases we deal with whether or not people's names need to be included in there, whether or not it should be the title of an individual versus the individual personal name, as well as in certain cases there are opportunities or there are times where an investigator may choose or believe that one violation of a citation has happened. However, other individuals within the agency do not believe that that is a true reflection of what is or is not happening on that specific site.
Well, Ms. Todd, wouldn't it be appropriate then to say one investigator thought this is what happened, but other ones thought this would be happening and include both reports in the investigation instead of changing one of the investigators' reports? Wouldn't that be the appropriate way to handle that? It seems to me that if one investigator said, I saw this, and puts it in a report, that it would not be appropriate to say, no, you didn't see it, change your report.
I believe, it depends specifically on the report, and it depends specifically on the information that is in there. In some cases, it's a training mechanism for the employee, and they need to be informed of what is or is not appropriate, as well as the fact that these are preliminary reports. They are not final reports at any way, shape, or form until the report is sent to the employer. Therefore, we clearly need to realize that as the investigator is going through and identifying and putting together reports, it's just like anyone else who goes through and modifies or generates a report and looks at a specific piece of information. As additional people review it, additional people may choose to make changes. And I don't believe as typical, if you make a change or any of us make a change to report, that in any case we also include what all the other individuals indicated what should or could not have happened.
Well, why would an investigator be told to close a report before they've completed the investigation? Why would that possibly happen?
Is there a specific one that you're referring to, Senator?
We'll get that later, but I just would like to know why you would want to do that.
There are various reasons that could involve as to why a specific report needs or does not need to be closed. I can think of at least a couple that have happened in a period of time where in some cases a report was open or an investigation was open for a year. And so the employer was contacted to be able to say that an investigation was going on. However, we were not able within a year to identify that a general duty citation was or was not appropriate.
Senator
Olson. Cases like that where there are, in some cases, loss of objectivity potentially by the investigator, other things need to be done in order to be able to ensure that we're complying with all our requirements.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam, Mr. Chair. Ms. Todd, I'm wondering, do these reports ever end up as a part of any litigation? I mean, are they ever introduced as evidence in litigation?
Todd.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, yes, they are. There are various different parts of this report that are put forth in litigation. It is very common for the Department of Labor and Industry to receive requests, especially from injured employees or their families, for redacted or other copies of our specific investigations for other things that they may or may not be pursuing.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I think I knew that, but I wanted to hear that from you because this isn't really ever been my area of practice, but I knew enough about these reports to know that they do have, I think, some pretty important legal significance in terms of being representative of the agency's position in an investigation. And so I guess I'm surprised at the way that you described that that changes to reports would be handled. I know in most cases, like, say, for example, medical records or other kinds of records, I mean, you can add an addendum. You can make a correction as long as it's clear what the original entry would have been, but you cannot go back after the fact and alter an original representation as a part of some kind of an official record that's going to be used in litigation that would change the ability of someone to be able to know what original entry was made. It seems to me that that would come very close to providing a misrepresentation to the court or whoever might be using these documents of what the initial findings would have been. And that would be very concerning to me. I have to say I'm really surprised.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, again, the reality is that these are not final reports. This is an initial draft of a document that is generated by an investigator. This initial draft is reviewed by others within the agency. In some cases, we correct typos. In some cases, we correct grammar. In some cases, we correct other things. Yes, there are times when others will believe that there is not a violation to a specific standard. And if there is not a violation to a specific standard, or if the investigator believes that in some cases, they may or may not be able to have the proof, and in cases like that where there is not sufficient proof in the documentation provided by the investigator in order to be able to determine whether or not a citation is or is not able to be issued, that is when those reviews clearly do or do not happen. Again, I cannot make it more clear to anyone involved in this specific process. This is clearly a review process. These are not final until they are sent out by the Department of Labor and Industry. It's not a medical report where a doctor is making a note in a report that's going to be looked at and evaluated by another medical profession. Instead, it is a report that maybe is similar to something you would be writing in regard to potential other things in regard to things that you are working on. It is an internal document that is not final and is in preliminary status throughout the entire process until it is issued.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Todd. Well, again, it isn't just medical records. I can police reports. I mean, to me, that there's a long list. And I guess the difference, a final report or a final synopsis, a final determination is, I understand you have a process through your department for coming to that final process or final conclusion, whatever it may be. But if the supervisor or, say, someone in your position is overruling the decision of the investigator and the report doesn't make that clear, doesn't the report then somehow give the misimpression that the investigator would have come up with a certain finding? I mean, does the report list who the investigator was? Is the finding attached to that person as an investigator? Because, again, just knowing how court processes work, I would think a person has a right to know what the person in the field doing the investigation and making that interpretation, whether it's a police officer or any other paid public servant, what that person's opinion was. If that person's opinion was overruled by a supervisor, then that should also be a part of the record. But to not have that entire information, I would think, would be very misleading at best.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson.
Ms. Todd.
I believe that the information that we do include in there is a true and accurate reflection of what has or has not happened in that specific file. And anything that does not meet the requirements and others would question would be, if needed, identified in the report. But clearly, I believe that what is there is an accurate and true reflection of what is happening in those specific investigations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Todd, in those situations where an initial investigator's conclusion has been changed in the ultimate report, then would the report reflect the initial finding and then the fact of the change? Or would the report not have just been simply altered with no record of what the initial finding was?
Ms. Todd.
Senator, or Chair, Senator Olson, that it typically depends. In some cases, it is included clearly in the narrative that indicates that that the investigator had concerns about whether or not this change did or did not occur. So in some cases where there is a level of concern, depending on the specific individual, that information it would typically be included in a file.
But,
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, but in other cases, Ms. Todd, I mean, how is that determined then? Just is that an arbitrary decision that who decides if an initial report is not going to be included or an initial finding is not going to be included and is simply going to be altered? And how would anyone ever know, looking at this, then, if that's their standard of practice, whether that had occurred?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, as you can tell, there are review processes that are clearly articulated. There is a standard review process that deals with the standard investigations that we do. I think probably some of your concerns may revolve around the processes that are used for serious injuries and fatalities. In those specific cases, it requires a supervisor, a director, and in some cases it actually goes to the Attorney General's office before we issue a specific citation. And the reason is that the burden of proof that we have to have in order to issue a citation is at a certain level. And if we do not meet that burden of proof, we are not able to issue a citation. And it is not arbitrary or capricious. It is clearly defined when we review specific files, what files we are reviewing, and why we are reviewing those.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, unless I missed your point in that response, I don't know if it answered my question, or maybe I didn't make my question clear. I guess what I'm wondering is, it seems as though there are some cases where an investigator's findings are changed without it being kept as a part of a record, so that someone later looking at the report would know what the initial report or the initial finding was. I guess I'm just wondering, first of all, that seems to be a correct assumption from what you're saying, and how would a person know, or is there any way that you would ever know, if you got the record after the fact, when that had occurred?
Ms. Todd.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I want to make it very clear to the individuals who are here. The process that we use to review files in the OSHA program is exactly similar to what federal OSHA does in regard to how they review and look at files. The files that are reviewed are clearly looked at to see whether or not they meet the burden of proof that we are legally required to have in order to prove a specific citation. In regard
Ms. Todd,
to
Ms. Todd,
whether or
Ms.
not...
Todd, Senator Olson would like to know why you would change an investigator's report and not tell anybody you did it. That's what she wants to know.
Who would we not be telling?
Well, if you took an investigator's report out of the file and put your own report in, we would like to know why that could possibly happen.
I don't believe that does happen.
I think that's what she's trying to find out here, because you're indicating that that can happen. Now, you may review an investigator's report and you might change it. You might change the commas, you might change the spelling, you might change the grammar, but it sounds like you might change it because you didn't agree with what the investigators found. What Senator Olson wants to know, I think at least what I'm hearing Senator Olson ask, is if you decide that an investigator's report is inappropriate, why would that investigator's report be omitted from the report and a new citation be put in the report? Was I clear on that? Is that what I heard,
yeah.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chair, that's kind of exactly the point I'm trying to get at, is that I as a lawyer, if I were handling this case and asking for a copy of this report, I would think that I would have a right to know what the original investigator had found in his findings and what he thought of the report. Even if it didn't turn out to be the ultimate final conclusion of the agency, that I'd be able to know what each of these individual people thought who were involved in the inspection of the case, rather than just having that opinion omitted in a way that you would never know that person didn't concur with the ultimate finding.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson.
Ms. Todd.
Those comments are included. We have a narrative portion within the investigative report, which includes information which also includes perspectives from the specific inspector in regard to the specific cases. So if there is anything that the investigator feels needs to be included in the narrative because of the fact that a change was made, those will normally be included in the narrative, which will be available to individuals to determine whether or not that information is appropriate. In cases, there may be performance-related problems with specific investigators that may result in things that are being dealt with. However, the narrative will typically include the information from the investigator if they do not agree with the recommendation or changes that have happened.
Senator Koch.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. When I came into the committee, I'm looking at OSHA investigations, and I'm just if you can help me out, I'm not an attorney like Senator Olson, but I've watched enough Law and Order to kind of know a cross-exam when I see it. And I'm curious at where we're going.
You missed my opening comment.
Oh, okay, so. and that's fair enough. So if you could repeat,
we have a couple of people on the agenda to come up yet who are a couple of former OSHA investigators, and so we're finding out what they've been telling us, and you want to. In fact, I'll have Mr. O'Rourke give you my opening comments so you can read them, and then you'll understand what we're doing.
Apologies,
here. Senator Vanderveer.
Mr. Chair, is it Ms. Todd?
Mm-hmm.
Is a final when you issue a ruling, you have a final report that goes with that? Is that what typically happens? I guess the question is, and you partially answered it, when you change. You have a file on this. If somebody was going to investigate the department, let's say, and say that what they're kind of implying here is true, that an investigator had his original findings altered by somebody else because they didn't like whatever they concluded, is there a file that has the original report in it somewhere from an investigator? And then you said typically you will include in the report or in the narrative the different perspectives. So if it was atypical, it was a performance issue, and you didn't think, the department didn't think that something should be included in that, and they keep it out, is there still a file that has that somewhere someone investigating it could find?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we have filed the information that is sent to the employer is the one set of information, and that includes the citation and why it was issued. We have information that is included in an investigative file, which is available which is developed during the investigative process. In that investigative file, it will include information about whether or not there have been or will be made changes to the specific file, and that's where those type of things would be located. So, yes, it's available in a document that is available through the Department of Labor and Industry. Mm-hmm. I can't, again, make this more clear that we have been investigated in regard to the complaints that are being brought forth by the two individuals. We have been investigated by federal OSHA in regard to these. We have been found to have no violations and to be totally compliant with the requirements of federal OSHA. We have gone through two litigations. We have gone through the trial court, the district court, and we are now at the Court of Appeals in regard to whether or not the allegations that are being brought forth that are resulting in this. And we have succeeded at each and every one of those levels.
Senator Vanderbilt, were you done?
Well,
go ahead.
I guess I am for now. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Todd. And I guess I'm not as familiar with the circumstances as the chair is, and other than just some initial remarks. So maybe it would be helpful for us to put this in context if we knew a little more about what those allegations were.
Ms. Todd.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I believe there are individuals here who are probably going to be talking, as the chair indicated, later on in the agenda. So I would hesitate to be willing to articulate their thoughts and processes in regard to that.
Okay, that's a good segue. Why doesn't Mr. Crosby and Mr. Swanson, why don't you guys come up to the table if you want to bring your lawyer with, go ahead. Go ahead and grab an extra chair so all three of you can sit there if you want.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask, I guess, and I read your opening comments, and actually then Senator Koch took them with her, so I don't have them in front of me, but I guess I'm just wondering, and my indication from Ms. Todd was that it's in Court of Appeals right now.
Some of it is.
Okay, and maybe that'll become clearer in a few minutes, but I guess I'm wondering why we're doing this at this point and not letting the judicial process run its way through, because we're kind of stepping in the middle if it's been through several levels of the court system. I guess I really question why we would be doing this in the middle of the whole judicial process, given that we're not a court of law and people are having to bring their lawyers with them and things like that. And
it'll become clear.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I will wait.
Who wants to go first? Just say your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and fellow senators, my name is Douglas Crosby. I reside in Bemidji, Minnesota. And I'm here today to help to expose some of the, imperfections at the Department of Labor and Industry. And I thank you for this opportunity to be heard. After I and Mr. Swanson speak, it'll become very clear why we are here today. So please be patient. Ms. Todd has taken you through inspection processes and also how we basically do business at OSHA. What I will be bringing you through is a few of different files where we've been asked to alter evidence, remove documents, and to refrain from citing certain large companies within the state of Minnesota. I will refrain from giving you details as to the files because I will not violate Chapter 13 Data Practices statutes. But I can talk to you about the stuff in regards to what is in the federal website that is public. And I can also talk to you in relation to the files as they are public within the court record. But I will not go into details or anything that would violate Chapter 13.
Okay. Go ahead.
I've worked for the agency, or I did work for the agency between the time frames of June 19, 2002 up until June of 2008, where I resigned during that time. Over the course of that time, I was asked to alter files, remove documents, not cite companies, and actually go to places that we didn't have probable cause to be at. You, in your possession, have, from what I've seen, the documents. You have lists of various federal website downloads, which you can do from the website. You also have OSHA directives, which are just a few of the many that we use to govern the way we do our job. And I have to say that I have been told to alter evidence and files for large companies that are within the MnSTAR program. I have been asked to leave memos out of the file that talk about changes that were asked by Ms. Todd and other supervisors. And that I was told that those aren't to be included in the file. Mr. Chair and Senators, I believe that Senator Olson hit it on the head when she talked about that all the evidence needs to be in the file. There is files out there that have been altered that have ended up in third-party lawsuits where attorneys have not been able to get discovery. This is a circumvention of the due process rights set forth under not only the Minnesota Constitution, but also the federal Constitution. And that's why we're here today. In one instance, in a MnSTAR site, It was a multi-employer situation where an individual was burned, second and third degree burns. I was told not to give a citation to the parent company because they were in the MnSTAR program. For all of you that do not know what MnSTAR is, it's a cooperative effort between Minnesota OSHA and companies to bring about a desired level of lost workday injuries and safety excellence. On another case, I was asked to group citations that aren't normally grouped under the grouping policies at OSHA and remove some to achieve a desired lowered penalty amount for a company. This one had memos by not only myself, but Mr. Swanson submitted to the file explaining the changes that we made and the changes that we felt were infringing upon illegal activity. The current file of this case does not have those memos. And yet another one. I was told not to get a toxicology report from a coroner, and that I was supposed to finish the fatality file without it. The problem with this fatality file is, Ms. Todd may have mentioned this, I may have missed it, there are fatal factors when a fatality occurs. There's the original violation that occurred, and then the investigator has to figure out whether that violation contributed to the death of that individual. In this instance, had I failed to follow correct procedure and not get the toxicology report, there would have been a lack of evidence which would have forced me to give the company a $25,000 fatal factor fine, which is you guys enacted as a minimum a few years back. Fortunately, I did wait against my supervisor's and director's wishes, and the toxicology report found that this individual was intoxicated. Therefore, I could not rule the serious violation at the establishment as the sole contributor to his death. This is the importance of having all of the evidence in the file. On one, and that one was very recent. That was in 06, I believe. In another one in 06, in the spring of 06. I gave citations to two identical companies side by side in a roadway that did the exact same thing wrong. Both received identical citations. Both received the same attention while on site. It went through the entire review process with no problems. However, when it got to the top, it was one of them, one of the companies was rescinded. Both companies did the exact same thing wrong. One company complained to management at OSHA, and that one was rescinded. That in itself is a violation of 182.66 of the Minnesota State Statutes, which says that once a violation has occurred, the commissioner of the state of Minnesota has 6 months to issue a citation. There was sufficient evidence in the file. I can't imagine what the company that got a fine and paid for it, when they find out about this, is going to say when the other one got off for the same thing. The evidence in that file was even further supported by the senior safety engineer at MnDOT of the Northwest District to make sure that the evidence was correct. Getting back to the MnStar one, this one is overly blatant because of the fact that it was a formal complaint. Now, MnStar has exemptions during serious injuries and during some other programmed inspections for a period of 3 years if they meet certain criteria. However, the directive that you have in your document does not allow them exemptions in fatalities or formal complaints. This was a formal complaint because I had originally asked to go out on it to Ms. Todd as a serious injury. She said we would not go out on it, although that is one of our things that we do go out on and mandated by federal guidelines to go out on. So I had to wait until I got a formal complaint from somebody. This person was burned from their waist up to their top of their head, second and third degree burns. And what was even more blatant about this is that within the record, there was between 13 and 14 work orders for this piece of equipment to be fixed by the controlling employer who was not getting a citation. This is not review of files. This is obstruction. It's not review of files. What she failed to tell you when you were asking the questions, and you were very direct in your question, and I compliment you on your questions. What she failed to tell you is that each investigator signs off on them as a record. When we sign that, we're stating that it's the truth to the best of our ability and what we know. And I take that seriously, and I know my colleague here does too. It's very hard for us to come to you about this stuff. But as you well know, the legal process takes years. And I know there are, in my case, there's 8 to 10 files that have been changed. I know there's numerous with Terry. And I know there's others. Others have left the agency. We have a high turnover rate because of this problem. And that's why we came to you. Because this obstruction of justice, this circumvention of due process has to stop today. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Swanson, would you like to say something?
Mr. Chair, Senators, I was an OSHA investigator from August 28th.
Terry, say your name for the record, Terry.
Excuse me?
Say your name for the record, please.
Yeah, my name is Terry Swanson. I was an investigator for OSHA from August 28th, 1990, until I believe 2007, when I resigned. In 2000, in early November, I was told to go into the Department of Corrections, Oak Park Heights facility, to investigate a serious injury. Over the course of that investigation, I did approximately 37 interviews. I was working closely with the Attorney General's office, and we had made an initial subpoena for some material, and in April, which was approximately 4 months into the investigation, I was called by my supervisor, and I was told that this investigation is ending without no real explanation. shortly after that, I was called again and told that I would need to make some changes and some deletions to my case file. I was preparing to write general duty citations on the Department of Corrections because I believed, and as well, the Attorney General that I was working with concurred that they had some problems. And I was called into the office in Duluth, and I was told by my supervisor that if I don't make these corrections, third floor, which is the commissioner's floor, is going to turn heat up on you so high that you ain't going to be able to stand it. You better make changes. I told my supervisor that I would like to speak to my own hired attorney to find out if it was legal. He told me, don't worry about that. He said, you better make the changes. I said, I'd like something in writing then if I got to make changes to this file. After a short time, he came back with a piece of paper. Sit here. Is that going to do it? I said, I guess so. Yeah. However, I didn't make all the changes. I just made a couple of them, and he didn't check it. Shortly after that, I was told that there was going to be a closing conference for this investigation. I met with Ms. Todd, my supervisor, that particular agent, to discuss how we were going to present the fact that we were going to issue no citation to the Department of Corrections. I stopped them short and I said, if I got to hold a closing conference at Oak Park Heights, all I'm going to say is that the department has decided not to issue citations in this investigation. I said, I'll say no more. That's what happened. And then a little while later, document circulated said we have to write a report that's consistent with a finding of no citations for this Oak Park Heights file. And I had been talking to my attorney all the time, and finally I had it. I was about as cooked as I could get. Because I have a conscience. Because I knew there were citations I would hold up in this. I just got done doing the Katie Poyer investigation. I just got done doing a Faribault Department of Corrections investigation that were all workplace violence, and we issued citation. And I know general duty. I know that general duty clause better than Ms. Todd. After that, I went to the Attorney General's office. And I had a meeting with Ken Peterson and Mike Hatch. The changes were made to that file. Something happened. No citations were issued. Another investigation I did was a contractor in East Grand Forks. He was a small contractor. He had one employee. I couldn't determine a finding relative to that company recognizing a safety hazard and doing something about it that was associated with that fatality. So I did not issue fatality citations to that company. The file was reviewed by the principal investigator. The file was reviewed by my supervisor. The file got to Ms. Todd. Ms. Todd ran over to another principal investigator, and I got a call from that principal investigator. Hey, you did a hell of a job documenting this thing. I want you to know that. But he says, Ms. Todd wants citations. Ms. Todd wants citations in this investigation. Now, it was reviewed by him, and then she sent it over to another investigator, principal investigator, and a supervisor. And all the while, she was having meetings with me, trying to pressure me into changing my file. Got so bad one time, I asked her 6 times, can I leave the room, please? Can I leave the room, please? Can I leave the room, please? Got the union involved in it. So I had a witness. They even went so far as, if you want changes, why don't you make the changes yourself? Write a letter. Attach it to the file. The union and I had a meeting with her. Todd, I was told to make the changes. I was given 10 days. I was given a letter of expectation. Well, I had to have knee surgery, so I was gone for 12 weeks, and I didn't make the changes to that file. When I come back, I looked on my computer, there was an email there from my supervisor. He said he made the changes to the file because I wasn't there to make them. I don't know what the changes were. Nobody ever told me, but my name's still on that file. While all this was going on, they brought some supervisors up to Duluth to a meeting. Started talking about making changes to files. Had one supervisor say, you know what, we're good at handling attorneys. You know, we don't want any of them $35 million lawsuits associated with us. I asked a question. I says, well, if I got to testify on a particular file and I have to take an oath, tell the truth, then the attorney asked me, is that your file? What am I supposed to say? Told me, oh, don't worry about that. We'll take care of that. My case is still in appeal. I have rights. I have due process. We want to talk about the district court. We'll talk about the district court because that's a matter of record, too. You can read the summary judgment. It found in there that I was engaged in protected activity and that Mr. Isaacson violated the law in one particular case. And I'm not going to talk about that case because, as you know, it's under appellate review. Do you want to know something, Senator Fischbach? I've been at this since this stuff started. 2001. Almost 8 years. Because I was a civil servant at that time, and I felt it was my duty, I had to do it. But now I'm not a civil servant, but I believe that people have to tell the truth. There ought to be some truth in files, too. When you write a file, an investigator writes a file. That investigator might be wrong, maybe. But don't change his file. He can attach a letter. He can do anything. Don't change the file. It's got his name on it. The judge is going to look at that. That's why I'm here. Because you need to know. You need to know what's going on. And it isn't me, just me and him. There's other people. Other people that can get up here. If they want to, if they will.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Crosby and Mr. Swanson, I just like to say, you know, actually, this is the first time today, even though apparently we're from the same hometown, that I've ever heard of this case. But I just want to thank you both for coming forward. I'm sure I'm not the only legislator sitting at this table that's received information from public employees in a brown manila envelope because they're concerned, whatever department they may be working for, about repercussions. And I just find that very sad state of affairs. That's one reason why we have a whistleblower law that we've introduced this session that would try to put to broaden the protection of whistleblower, the whistleblower statute for public employees so that you don't have to meet necessarily certain technical requirements of reporting a violation of law, but as long as you're talking to someone in the interest of public safety, you'd have that, or the public interest, you'd have that protection. But I want to go back and ask, I'm assuming that these are open court files, that, you know, that they're a matter of public record, your cases and the appeal. I don't know. Because what I'm wondering, we heard Ms. Todd say, you know, that these have been reviewed and, I mean, they've been dismissed as a matter of summary judgment without knowing anything about the facts of your case, but knowing something about how whistleblower cases work. I know that cases can be dismissed because of technical reasons having to do with statutes of limitations or whether the complaint met the requirements of the whistleblower law or whatever, without having anything to do with the underlying truth or falsity of what you've been talking about here today. And it seems to me that regardless of what may happen to your individual lawsuits, that this committee would have a vital interest for two different reasons in the allegations you're talking about, which to me are extremely serious and concerning because they go to the very purpose of OSHA, and that's in protecting public safety in a neutral, non-arbitrary, non-political way. And also the integrity of OSHA reports. I mean, if these things, if we don't know whether this is a valid presentation of an inspector's findings, I would think that would call into question the very validity of the OSHA reports that are out there right now. I mean, how do we know which ones are accurate portrayals of the person who signed that document or which one aren't? I can't believe that this is standard practice and that other states are just, you know, pulling documents, putting something under someone's signature that wasn't what that person found. I just can't, I find that incredibly hard to believe. And I would think that there's a real concern about the integrity of those reports based on your testimony, and that we really need to get to the bottom of it, find out. I mean, we're not fact finders here today. Someone needs to get to the bottom of this, I guess is what I'm saying, because those are very, very concerning issues.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, I'll try and remember everything that you brought up there. First, to address the appellate court, yes, you're very correct that, as I stated earlier, these things take time. Both of our cases are in the appellate court seeking a whistleblower trial by jury. And to bring forth this information so that the people know what has gone on and that whatever due process needs to take place takes place, okay? You're also correct in what you stated that even though that's going on aside and that may take some time, we've been working on this for upteen 6 years now, basically. Sometimes it takes time. However, to stop the problems that are occurring right now, this is our venue. We don't have another venue other than this committee to stop the what we allege as illegal activity and the circumvention of due process rights. Your other point,
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, maybe just to direct you a little bit, Mr. Crosby, would it be correct to say that the courts at this point have never examined the underlying validity of the allegations that you made about, you know, whether information was pulled from these reports or not, or were there legal reasons for the summary judgment? I don't know if you can answer that. That's kind of
Mr.
a legal
Chair,
question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I'm going to refrain from getting into the legal aspect of it based on the fact that my attorney has advised me not to get into that. However, you are correct that the actual evidence has never been litigated, so to speak, okay? It has not got to that point yet, okay? A summary judgment hearing is just that. You know, they decide whether or not there's going to be a trial. Okay? So that's as far as it's been. And that's all I'm going to get into that. To get back to your other point about that you asked about in regards to why this is so important and why you had not heard about this before and things like that. I'm aware of it going on since 2002. Mr. Swanson has been at the agency longer than I, so he's aware of additional. There are other people that have been at the agency upwards of 33 years or 35 years, and they could tell you some stories too. However, you are our only venue to get this going and to stop. Someone has to say, you can't do this anymore. This is the only law enforcement agency that I'm aware of, and I have multiple relatives and friends that are in everything from sheriffs, police, in the military. I have very good friends that are in multiple agencies, and they can't believe that this is even going on. When a police officer, for instance, comes back to the office and types out a CFS report about what happened at a traffic accident, their supervisor doesn't review that and say, oh, well, that didn't happen at that stop sign. And that's basically what's going on here. The people that are reviewing this and changing it are not even certified investigators. They do not have the training that we have in order to put their name on the documents, and that's why their names are not on the documents. When Mr. Swanson talks about his 16 years here, that's a lot of training. And you don't get that overnight. And so all we're asking is that someone be ordered to investigate this fully. And Ms. Todd, as you talked about, and you elated to, that the federal agencies have reviewed this and looked through it. I don't know if that's true. However, I find it hard to believe because we haven't received any information on it through discovery. I have a hard time believing that that actually happened. There is no report out there that we have seen. And I'm sure that federal OSHA, if federal OSHA found out that a file did not have a federal number and was not in the system right now, they'd want to know about it. And so I'm very thankful that you guys have taken the time. And I see that some of you are very, very in tune and paying attention in this.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Swanson, you've been with the agency since 1990. I'm curious, was this going on your whole career, or is this something that is started recently? And if it is something that started recently or it was going on, has it become a bigger problem in recent years?
Excuse me, a bigger problem than
Over the years, has this been going on? First question is: has this been going on since you started at the agency in 1990?
I don't know.
And from your experience is what I'm asking.
I don't know.
Was there a starting point when it started to become obvious, and is that a later time? And I don't know if that's if you're. Senator Kielash.
Senator, I became aware of this, as I stated, in 2001, when, as I was involved in the Oak Park Heights investigation, the serious injury, that investigation was ended abruptly.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, Senator. Mr. Swanson, prior to 2001, you hadn't had this issue. Is that what you're saying? Okay, thank you.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I guess just for background, I would like to know what the issues are in the court. What did the court decide? What were the issues in the court case? I guess I understand you guys are talking about the whistleblower issues, but I'd really like to have an understanding about what was involved in the court case? What were the outcomes? Where are we at with that? Because I guess I've got some testimony from the Swanson case, but I don't have the background to make this make any sense for me because it just I got to understand what happened.
Excuse me, may I speak? Mr. Chair and Senator, I believe if we start going into the actual status of the specific litigation, the fact that there is one attorney here and there is not the attorney who is representing us from the Attorney General's office, I don't believe that that would be able to provide a balanced representation of what is or is not happening at those specific cases. I also would believe and clearly articulate that some of the files that they are referring to are the files that are presently revolving in the specific litigation, and there are two sides to the various different stories. And again, as for the reason why they have not gone past summary judgment, they have reviewed the specifics of some of these cases because, as you can tell from the affidavit that you were provided as well as additional affidavits, there has been testimony and discussion regarding these specific cases.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we need to argue about the court case here. What I'm just looking for, and I don't know if Senate counsel can help or whatever, I just kind of want to know what the case was about, what's been decided. If you've done any background on that, really plain and simple, just a case brief. I don't need to know.
Ms. Schlesinger, you know the answer to that? And if you don't want to disclose anything, that's fine too.
Sure.
Just say your name for the record, and then.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Schlesinger. I represent Mr. Terry Swanson, mm-hmm. and I'd be happy to talk briefly about the procedural posture of the case without going into any of the specific allegations. Talk specifically about what the various courts have held in Mr. Swanson's case.
Is that what you want?
That would be helpful to
Senator Fischbach, is that what you want?
Mr. Chair, that would be very helpful. All I need is what issue was dealt with and what was the outcome. I don't want, and Ms. Todd, I appreciate it. I don't want to get into a lot of stuff. I just need some background. We're throwing around a lot of stuff, and I need to understand where we're really coming from.
Senator Olson.
And Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, sir, I didn't get your name.
David Schlesinger.
Mr. Schlesinger, are these cases filed in district court, so they are a matter of public mm-hmm. record?
For the most part, yes, they are filed in district court. They are a matter of public record. There are certain exhibits attached to affidavits which have been marked confidential, and so they're not a matter of public record. But the vast majority of the documents, at least in Mr. Swanson's case, are a matter of public record.
Okay.
The two Senator Fischbach's question, Mr. Schlesinger.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the procedural posture of both of these cases is that whistleblower lawsuits were brought in Ramsey County, and both claims were dismissed on summary judgment, and they're both now on appeal. Mr. Swanson's case has been argued for the Minnesota Court of Appeals, and we're waiting for an order on that appeal, which should be out sometime in April. Now, when you bring a whistleblower claim under Minnesota law, there are three elements that need to be proved. First is that there has been a protected activity, meaning the employee made a report of illegal activity, okay, or suspected illegal activity. The second thing is, to be more specific, the employee needs to report activity they suspect is illegal. It actually needs to be illegal if it had occurred, okay? So that's the first element. The second element is they need to show that there was an adverse employment action taken against them. And Senator Olson, you in particular may be aware that there's a U.S. Supreme Court case that came out very recently that changed that standard. It's called Burlington Northern v. White. So there's an open question of law in the state of Minnesota as to what constitutes an adverse employment action. Then the third element is that there needs to be a causal connection between the adverse employment action and the protected conduct. So you need to show fact questions on these three elements in order to survive summary judgment. In Mr. Swanson's case, the Ramsey County Court held, as Mr. Swanson testified, there had been a violation of law with respect to certain deletions from a case file that he worked on. And that's all a matter of public record. There's an order, and I believe the committee may have a copy of that order. But the court held that Mr. Swanson had not proven that he had suffered an adverse employment action under the law as it stood. Because, in short, what happened to Mr. Swanson is that his home office where he worked was shut down. He wasn't terminated, but his home office where he worked was closed, and he was transferred to another office 110 miles or so from his house. And the court held that that did not constitute an adverse employment action. We've appealed that to the Court of Appeals, and the court also held that there was no causal connection. We appealed that to the Court of Appeals. The issue about whether there had been a violation of law with respect to Mr. Swanson's file has not been appealed. So that's established law at this point on his case. So we're waiting for an order from the Court of Appeals, and that's where we are.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. That is what I wanted to understand better where we were at. Thank you. And I'm assuming that's similar as Mr. Crosby's case.
I've reviewed Mr. Crosby's case, but his case is on appeal. I don't know exactly which elements were appealed and which elements were proven at the district court.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, Mr. Chair, with that explanation, I would have to say, and that's kind of what I was guessing, knowing how whistleblower cases are, you know, it's one thing to say that something illegal happened or didn't happen and have a trial about that. It's a whole other matter to be able to show that that's why you were fired, or even if you were fired, if there was, you know, if moving is the equivalent of that kind of an adverse employment action. those aren't really concerns, I wouldn't think, for this court. I mean, those relate to their individual cases. But the thing that we're concerned about, whether there was illegal activity that impacts public safety and impacts the integrity of the reports from this agency, I mean, even it sounds like that's already been decided against the agency, at least in this one particular case, which to me is very different from the testimony that Ms. Todd gave this committee.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I believe I'd like to clarify your description of it. I believe that the decision said if what was being alleged did occur, it would have been a violation of the statute. It did not say whether or not, they did not investigate whether or not there was enough evidence to say whether or not it did or did not occur.
I disagree with you, but it speaks for itself. It's a matter of public record, and I believe the committee has a copy of it.
Senator Olson.
Well, and Mr. Chair and Ms. Todd, I mean, we'll probably, I know I'm going to read that now and see exactly what it says. But even if what you're saying is true, that's very different than what you said initially at this hearing when you said that you were totally exonerated mm-hmm. by the court. I think that's what I heard you say, that they found totally in your favor. And that's different now than saying, well, they didn't find against us exactly, or they said there wasn't enough evidence to support that, to be able to say that for sure. So that's a little different. But I guess we can see exactly what the order itself says.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I spoke based on the information that has been provided to me by the Attorney General's as to their interpretation as to what the status is and what their belief of the opinions have indicated. So I have spoken based on that specific information. Again, I think it's clear when you listen to some of the information that is shared here. As they indicated, this is the only available venue that is available to them. And the reason that is the only available venue that is available to them is because their union did not bring this forth because they did not believe that there was enough to bring forth to arbitration or mediation in regard to these specific issues. There are so have, again, the hearings that have gone through regarding these specific cases have indicated that there isn't evidence that supports their specific allegations. And to me, one of the things that I think needs to be understood is that these are pending litigations. And these are pending litigations based on two employees' perspective of four or five files out of files that we do. We do about 20 to 30,000 files during that period of time. And there are two employees here who have expressed concern over an extremely small percentage of those files. And again, no percentage is an acceptable percentage. I'm not saying that it is. I am clearly articulating that we continue to be able to hold that what we are doing in the process within the state of Minnesota, within the Department of Labor and Industry, within the OSHA program, clearly meets the requirements that have been established and has been proven to meet those requirements.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, to me, that's sort of analogous to the testimony to what we just heard the situation that came up with the Veterans Home, for example, where we heard of a pattern of problems in the Veterans Homes of things that were violations and safety concerns. And while there might be someone who might sue the Veterans Home because a loved one was injured or killed because of those violations, we certainly would not investigate because there was a lawsuit pending. I mean, we have responsibility for anything that's happening within a state agency, and if there's a problem, I've heard today, basically an admission that at least in some cases, and I can't believe that this would ever, ever be okay, that at least in some cases the findings of that are signed under someone's name are altered in disagreement with the person who signed that report. And I can't believe that's not illegal. I just can't believe that.
It's illegal.
Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator, those issues, again, there are different interpretations as to whether or not what is being said by is what is actually happening. Again, those facts have been evaluated by other entities, including the court system, and they do not support the one interpretation of them. In regard to whether or not those specific things occur.
Okay, I think what we'll do here, because we aren't a court of law, but I think I'm going to let each of you make a final comment if you'd like. I don't exactly know what to do next, but I think we can certainly check to see if there's been an investigation, if there's been any follow-up within the department itself to see what's going on. They're in the middle of a lawsuit, and so they'll end up both having to deal with that on their own, but I would certainly like both of you, if you'd like to comment any further or make any comments to anything that's been said, to go ahead and say something, and then we'll follow up from there with the department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and fellow senators. I want to thank you for allowing us to be heard today. I think that is the first step in getting this out, because it needs to come out, and once it comes out, OSHA can probably be back to where it was meant to be. And it's got to start somewhere, and this is where it started, in this type of forum outside of the lawsuits. And after 6 years for me of waiting for this day, it is very, very comforting to me to hear some of you speak, and that there are some people here that still believe in due process. I hope that the committee goes away from this with a pretty good understanding of what may be happening, and uses their education and knowledge and positions that the people have put them in to somewhat help the situation become a better situation. And I hope and pray that that will happen. Thank you.
Mr. Swanson, you want to say anything?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senators, irregardless of whether it's 5 or 12 files, or there hasn't been an investigation, I can tell you this, that there are at least two people walking around in the state of Minnesota, that suffered some pretty severe injuries. And if you do an investigation, you remember these things, because that's the way the brain functions. And we are here today to tell you that these things are happening. I'm not here because I'm making this up, because this didn't happen. I'm here because this did happen. And I hope that you'll meet, talk about these things, and decide to do your own investigation.
Okay.
That's all I have to say.
Thank you
very much.
Okay. I appreciate you both coming from here. I thank you, Ms. Todd, for your testimony. And do any senators have any further questions or comments?
Just a quick one, Mr.
Senator Kielash.
Ms. Todd, I think it was Mr. Swanson said that supervisors don't have the training or certifications to sign off on these citation documents. Is that true, that the supervisors in the management of OSHA have less certifications than the people that are out in the field?
Ms. Todd.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I believe what Mr. Swanson was alluding to is that the Department of Labor and Industry, through the OSHA program, has an extensive training program for new investigators. That new investigative training includes training that's off-site, either in Chicago as well as here, as well as training that's within the department. We beyond that, there are no educational requirements that, well, we have recently put in some educational requirements which require that the individuals that we do hire have a safety and health degree. And also,
Mr. Chair, Ms. Todd, I asked a question about whether the supervision at OSHA has the ability to sign off on these documents. I didn't ask for an explanation of the training. Can they sign off, and are they qualified to sign off on the documents? Do they, you know, or do these inspectors have the or only ones in OSHA that have the authority? I don't need a training manual. I just need to know yes or no if they can sign off.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I believe they do. I believe they have the requirements to be able to accomplish that.
They've gone through all the training to meet the qualifications.
They have what I believe is that they can do that.
Just Todd, have you gone through the training?
Excuse me?
Have you gone through the training?
No, I have not.
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I just want to correct you that I wasn't the one that said that.
Okay.
Mr. Crosby was.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
Since this is kind of formal, we want to get it done.
Thank you for that correction. Well,
can you guys comment on that, Mr. Crosby? Can you, or can't you? I don't know if you can or not.
Mr. Chair and Senators, I would only the best way for me to respond to that is the chair has all of the depositions from the court cases, and you can read the deposition of Mr. Isaacson and Ms. Todd from my particular case. I know for sure that we went through maybe an hour and a half of asking Mr. Isaacson about that, and you can look that stuff up. It's a matter of public record. I don't know what they've done since I left the agency in June of 2008. However, I do know prior to that, neither Mr. Isaacson nor Ms. Todd were certified as investigators.
Okay.
Any further questions from the committee? Okay. Well, I think this is a pretty serious issue, and I'm going to look into it a little bit further on my own and see if the legislative auditor maybe would like to take a look into it. I don't know if the department has done its own internal investigation on this or not, but maybe that's something that should be warranted, and I'm not sure what the next step should be, but I agree with you, Senator Olson. I think this is pretty serious, and that we got to find out if what's going on here needs to be stopped, or if it's not going on, what's going on, and really see if we need to have some changes in the department. So I appreciate everything that's happened here, and I'm going to adjourn the meeting, and I will talk with counsel about what to do next. So, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Meeting adjourned.